Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion for this Monday, the 14th of August. Very nice to have you with us and welcome aboard. We have a lot to talk about, a very tumultuous weekend, so we obviously will discuss all of those issues. Let me introduce our panel to you, and then we'll get started. First, we have WAMC's Alan Chartok. Good morning, Alan.
Good morning. Bat in the house. When bat flying around the house.
What?
Bat in my house.
Oh, really?
Oh. Yeah. Bat in my house. 4 o'clock in the morning, I'm running all around the house.
Did you get it out?
Shoo him out the window. I don't know. I left a couple of doors open.
And then other ones can come in when you do that. That is,
of course, the balance issue.
The downside. Yeah. The downside. Communications consultant Teresa Bourgeois is here. Good morning, Teresa.
Good morning. Good morning.
Very nice to have you.
Nice to be had.
And we have Libby Post with us. Good morning.
Good morning, dear.
Our political consultant, Libby Post, also joining us via telephone because he is very important and is on the road.
Somewhere else.
Yes. Counterterrorism expert Malcolm Nance is with us. Good morning, Malcolm. Hello, Malcolm. All right. We had Malcolm. Are you there, Malcolm?
There.
You go.
Hey, Malcolm.
How are you, buddy?
By remote. Boy, I wish I was there.
We do, too.
We wish you were here, too. But we certainly thank you for taking the time out of your schedule to hang out with us for a little bit. I appreciate it. All right. So we welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org, and let us talk about the news, of course, that happened over the weekend, and that having to do with the situation in Charlottesville, Virginia. It was a rather tumultuous weekend, and what we have heard is a lot of a fallout. White House officials under siege over President Trump's reluctance to condemn white supremacists for the weekend's bloody rallies in Charlottesville, Virginia, tried to clarify his comments on Sunday as critics in both parties intensified demands that he adopt a stronger, more unifying message. A statement on Sunday issued more than 36 hours after the protest began condemned white supremacists for the violence that led to one death. It came in an email sent to reporters in the president's traveling press pool and was attributed to an unnamed representative. It was not attributed directly to Mr. Trump, who often uses Twitter to communicate directly on controversial topics, you know, like Rosie O'Donnell and Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Anyone else who we might not like. Anyone.
You know, those controversial topics.
Yes.
It also did not single out white supremacists alone, but instead included criticism of all extremist groups. So, Malcolm, let me begin with you because this brought up the question about terrorism, domestic terrorism, and is this a form of that? And as our counterterrorism expert, how would you answer such a question?
Well, I made my official ruling yesterday in a tweet where I said this is an official ruling that this was an act of terrorism. He was a radicalized extremist from a neo-Nazi group prone and known to violence. And he used a terrorist tactic, vehicle as weapon system attack, which is an ISIS-style attack tactic, to ram a group of protesters. And it was important because he used his attack to send a message to an audience beyond the immediate victims. And that's the technical definition of political terrorism.
So let us talk, and we'll obviously get back into that, but let us then talk about the silence and how important that is. Alan, does it matter that the of who says what and when it comes? So if we get it from 36 hours after the event from the president's office and not the president himself, how much should we read into that?
A great deal. A leader, pardon me, has to be responsible for words because, as we've said so many times here, words matter. The absence of words also matter. And I was struck by what Malcolm just said because, yes, this guy should be classified as a terrorist. But then you have to say from the very top down, what kind of encouragement is this president giving to these people? We do know that David Duke, for example, was roundly denounced when he ran by Republicans as well as Democrats. The Republican establishment knew enough to do that. This guy is playing with fire. Trump is playing with fire by playing footsie. And that's what it is, footsie with. Olivia, I know you're going to say jump on here, which is great. But he is encouraging, basically, and playing footsie with David Duke.
And it's interesting because after Trump's first benign response, which was a non-response response, it was nothing, David Duke threatened Trump publicly to say, just remember who your voters were. Just remember who put you in office. So it's, yeah, you know, it's very interesting that, you know, that first response that Trump gave, which was milquetoast at best. I mean, it was horrible. There's a lack of leadership. There's a lack of courage. The man's a coward, but it got attacked by his base. So he can't win for losing.
But to Alan's point, Malcolm, it seems to be, and I heard this term a lot over the weekend on the various news programs and analysis and cable news shows, which is a wink and a nod. So you basically have a wink and a nod. Mm-hmm. You say the statement, and meanwhile, there are people from these white nationalist groups who are on the internet saying the president is praising us for what we did on Saturday.
Well, absolutely. You know, this is an ideological-based attack which occurred. This didn't happen out of a vacuum. This wasn't a car accident. This wasn't a moment of madness. And we have a tendency when we have acts of what I call American terrorism, we don't like to use the word domestic terrorism because that tends to generally neutralize it. But this was an act of American terrorism, but which was based on an ideology that believes they now control the levers of power in the United States. Mm-hmm. And they believe that because the president's senior most advisor, Steve Bannon, is the editor-in-chief and owner of Breitbart, their mouthpiece, as he called it himself, the voice of the alt-right. And alt-right is their own code word for neo-Nazi and white supremacy. I don't even like to use the word white nationalism. That is not a technical term that we actually have in our textbooks. We call it white supremacist movement. So, you know, for Donald Trump to give this wink and a nod, which is what he did, he would not call them out. And right now there are two groups Donald Trump will not insult repeatedly, and that's Vladimir Putin and the white supremacy movement. And there's a reason for that, too. That's because Russia has become the ideological home of right-wing Christian conservatism, and they are actually funding many of these European and Western fascist groups and actually allowed neo-Nazi bikers to have rallies and conferences with Russian biker gangs that support Putin in Russia.
So, Teresa, I'll let you weigh in on this and how you see the president's response over the weekend. And I'll pretty much ask you the same question about the timing of it and the slow response and what we should take from that.
Well, it just seemed to me that everybody was looking to Donald Trump for moral authority on this issue, but he has no standing for moral authority on this issue. There's nothing in his history, there's nothing in how he campaigned, there's nothing in how he has governed that would suggest that he was going to do anything else than what he did. I mean, this is a person who, you know, took money from the Mercers and brought in Steve Bannon, and they funded Breitbart, which is the, you know, the paper of this, the news channel for this organization. The paper of record for, and proudly the paper of record for these folk, you know, for others, but certainly it's an organizing tool. During the campaign, when he was asked to condemn David Duke, he talked as if he'd never heard of him. But if you go back and previously he'd spoken out against David Duke, but when it was in his political interest not to, he didn't. So I've been mystified why people would think that he was going to do anything different. I mean, on this issue, you don't look to the person who's emboldened this group to then denounce this group. It's not going to happen. And so what we need to do is find our moral authority elsewhere and point out, you know, how dangerous this is. But the sad fact is that he's not the person with any standing and moral authority on this issue.
You know, Teresa, what's so... Malcolm and Libby and Joe, you know what's so interesting about this is that he's between a rock and a hard place now. We know that. And so he has to figure out what the de minimis response he can give. And he tried it. He said all bad groups should behave themselves, you know, instead of
blaming.
But why the focus on him? Why shift the focus to him? I mean, we have a problem in this country. He's part of the problem. And I think we need... I'm sorry to interrupt you, Alan.
No, go ahead.
It's just been really frustrating for me for the last 48 hours that somehow this horrible thing that happened has now become all about what Trump did or didn't say.
But I think
we need to be focusing on the issue itself. He's part of the problem, that others in our country need to speak up, our religious community, our other leaders, all of us, and denounce both him being complicit in fomenting this and the people who are doing
this. Okay, as long as you use the word both, I can live with it. But he's the president of the United States. And I was just going to finish up my thought there. That's okay. Which is, he's between a rock and a hard place. So all of a sudden we see Melania, of all people, tweeting, you know, that we don't want to put up with, you know, bad things. We see his daughter tweeting. Mm-hmm. You think these are separate acts? These people go out and do this without being told to do it? But we still see, out of the White House, from an unnamed source, not the president, we see an... So the truth is that this country... is dependent on leadership. All countries are dependent on leadership. And this guy has failed miserably, and he does not want to alienate that base of his, which is racist in large part. I'm telling you that now. And that's what the whole Charlottesville thing was. Mm-hmm. I watched the mayor on the TV this morning. This guy's terrific.
Fantastic. Yes. Right. Yeah. Yes, and that's where we're going to get our moral authority. I mean, and just like, sure, Melania Trump went out and said something and that was fine, except for that's like her saying that I'm going to lead an anti-bullying effort after her husband has, you know, months and months of verbal bullying in his political rallies. So, I mean, I think that he is not the solution to this. He's part of the problem.
Nobody is ever saying that he's the solution.
But all the focus is on what? Why won't he say something? But why, you know, I just think it's ridiculous the focus is turned to him
because
he's never going to be a moral authority on this issue.
He's not going to be a moral authority on any issue other than giving people license to hate. That's his moral authority, and we've seen that throughout the campaign. But there are those of us who still believe, and maybe we have to give up that belief, that the President of the United States should be a leader, should bring moral authority to some of these. If George Bush was president and this happened, he would have spoken out
absolutely
forcefully.
But he's not, you know, George Bush.
I get that, Teresa, but that's not the point. The point is, I think people... Well, I think what Alan's talking about, what I'm talking about, is a profound disappointment in the fact that this man can't speak out on anything that might just push and tweak his base just a bit. He did. He said that first statement. David Duke came back and attacked him. He's been getting... You know,
this is the man who encouraged violence at his rallies.
I know he did. But he's now he's the president. And now he's getting pressure from both the Republicans and the Democrats and the public to speak out forcefully on this. And he still can't. So, no, we won't ever get that. But what we do have is a groundswell of people throughout this country saying enough, speaking out. I was at the rally here in Albany yesterday. There were 500 people who came out in 24 hours notice to speak out against the hate. I mean, there are people who are standing up.
Malcolm, when you look at this as an overall, this is obviously, we talk about Charlottesville. This is not an isolated incident.
Right.
We have been talking about these incidents for a long time. What do you make of somebody like Sebastian Gorka, who has an official title within the White House, although we're not quite sure exactly what he does? And yet he is still coming out and saying that white men and white supremacists are not the problem.
first off, Sebastian Gorka is a fascinating character because in my world of counterterrorism experts and academics, he literally started the hashtag, you know, we literally started for him the hashtag fake terrorism expert. This guy is a right-wing neo-Nazi supporter of Hungarian origin. He wears the uniform and a badge at the inauguration of a right-wing extremist group that supported the Nazis in World War II. And he has no credibility, no bona fides in the terrorism world. None. Zero. And he is now speaking out as the principal attack dog for the president on many matters right now. Not to mention pairing that up with Steve Bannon and his, you know, the alt-right, you know, neo-Nazi white supremacist movement. The problem here is that I think that for all the discussions we're having on Donald Trump needs to say this, Donald Trump needs to stand up and act presidential, the fundamental point that is missing here, that very few will actually say in the media, is that I think it's time to draw a line and say the president is a racist and he supports white supremacy. Done. That's right. Why he won't do these things.
Right.
Same thing, reason why he loves Vladimir Putin. He is somehow beholden to these two groups. And these two groups are now aligned on an international scale. So until we say the president of the United States is now proven that he will not support all Americans, that he strictly is interested in supporting just one group of Americans and only the most extreme faction of that racial group, then we're never going to be able to get anywhere. And once you do that, the president is now framed in his proper context. And you can start speaking of him and understanding why he won't do X or Y. And when he does do it, why he does it reluctantly and has to be dragged.
We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Nice to have you with us. And let me reintroduce everybody. Alan Chartok, Teresa Bourgeois, Libby Post, and Malcolm Nance on our program this morning. And we thank you very much for being with us. We have some letters. We'll get to those. Why don't we do that right now?
Okay. I just want to say how proud we are to have Malcolm with us. I know, Malcolm, how busy you are, MSNBC and everything else, and we really appreciate your taking this time on this very important day.
Well, it's my pleasure.
Joe Baniak. Joe. If the driver of the car who rammed into the crowd was black, he would probably have been shot on the spot. If whites run their loud motorcycles up and down our streets, no arrest. If a black plays his boombox too loud, an ordinance is passed and enforced. Being white has its privileges. Trump has emboldened what Hillary called the basket of deplorables. Hey, Malcolm, you got any reaction to that one?
Well, I can only give you my opinion as an African-American. There is a disproportionate use of force within law enforcement. And I train law enforcement. I love law enforcement. Literally everyone in the state SWAT organization in New York State and the state intelligence organization has been trained by me at some point. And these guys do just want to do their jobs professionally. But I have to tell you, I think that law enforcement training in the United States, since the time that I went through SWAT officer school with the Capitol Hill Police as my co-companions, I was actually in the military at the time, has just gone haywire. Their use of escalation of force is to go straight to lethal weapons in most instances. I was really shocked at how these alt-right militias actually came armed to Charlottesville, stood at the perimeter of this place, and that somehow the state could find no fault with that and was enforced, you know, allowing them to have their Second Amendment rights. You won't find that in an African-American neighborhood. There's no Second Amendment rights. I'm very careful when I go to range because a lot of people, you know, they go to the shooting ranges. A lot of people have this double standard in their mind about what should happen to African Americans versus what should happen to everyone else.
Malcolm, a question I'd like your take on is, you know, the key with Trump's statement and some of the discussion of this is a sense of false equivalency. Do you think the Justice Department will prosecute this to the same sense of false equivalency? Or are they going to go just straight at the, you know, the white supremacist hate crime?
No, I don't think that. We have to take Justice Department at its word, and Jeff Sessions has a clear record that he does not see equivalency at this at all. He takes African-American crime. He takes other crimes committed by non, I don't even like to use ethnic terms, but by non-whites. He takes those far more serious than he takes these display of firearms. And I don't think that there's going to be a fair shake in this one. And he is just technically going to go and by the pace that is being set by the president. And we saw this before under the Bush administration. The president sets the pace and tone for what is going to happen down the chain of command and through policies in these countries. Michelle Obama put it best when she said, the presidency doesn't make a man. The presidency reveals what a man is made of. And we are now seeing what Donald Trump is made of. And the presidency is clearly revealing that.
Malcolm, I just wanted to follow up on your comment about Jeff Sessions. When they announced that they were going to do some kind of human or civil rights investigation into this, I thought, here we have a Justice Department who is, symbolically saying, on one hand, they're going to investigate this as a hate crime and a civil rights violation, and on the other hand, looking to dismantle affirmative action because it discriminates against white people, which is the core of what some of the white supremacists think. So it's very interesting, and I wonder how they're going to be able to play this out on, it's playing both sides off the middle, and I just don't think it'll work.
I'm sorry, Libby, I really had a little problem following that. Maybe it's my lack of intellect.
Okay, so yeah. on one side of the Justice Department, you've got Jeff Sessions saying, right, we're going to investigate what happened yesterday, yes, as a hate crime, blah, blah, blah. And then he's got the Civil Rights Unit,
right,
in the Justice Department investigating universities for affirmative action.
Yeah, I see.
And that they are discriminating against white people.
Yeah, well said.
And so
right, that's basically I'm trying to get at. Will the Justice Department, because the president's clearly not going to lead on this, mm-hmm, but who will lead? So clearly the mayor of Charlottesville is going to lead and some of the senators, but will the Justice Department do the right thing here?
Go ahead, Malcolm.
I think Justice Department will investigate this specific incident because it was a fatality. There was a fatality in that, but don't expect this to be the way that justice will, view equal rights. It has been made eminently clear. They're cutting the Civil Rights Division down to the bone. They're going to get rid of it eventually. And they view civil rights, they have said, as she said just a moment ago, they view civil rights as discrimination against whites. No longer a question of, discrimination against everyone else. This is a fundamental turning America's progress completely on its head. And, I hope that the good officers and lawyers at Justice, if presented with this, will either try to do the right thing or resign.
You don't really think either of those is going to happen, do you?
In the bureaucracy.
I think there will be some.
Yeah.
If you will.
There will be some. I don't think people now will want to be associated with a Justice Department, certainly as careerists, that may present some issues, that they seem to be siding with against American values.
Don't you think they would have long been out of here by now?
There's a lot of people who really want to do the right thing and stick with the nation. Mm-hmm. So we'll have to see.
I mean, that's the question. I don't want to make an equivalency to this in climate change, but just as he's clearly not the authority on climate change and other people, attorneys generals and Michael Bloomberg and others have stepped in and filled in that leadership gap. The question is, on this issue, who can we look to step in and fill that leadership gap?
It's so interesting that you say that, because I was thinking about, I was in New Orleans when they were taking down the statues. I know somebody will criticize me for using his middle name, but we're talking about Jeffrey Beauregard, Sessions. And I believe it's one of the, I'm probably wrong, Beauregard was one of the statues that got taken down. Clearly he wants to save his job. So we can examine this all we want from right and wrong, but really what this is about is good old-fashioned American politics. And when you said before, Libby, I guess it was you, that Trump, we now see, or Malcolm said, we now see what Trump's character is really like. Mm-hmm. I don't think Trump has a character. I think if it was in his interest to do the opposite of what he's doing, he would do it.
And I think what you're going to see is they're going to trot out this case that Jeff Sessions is saying that they're going to do to investigate civil rights violations as their, look, we're doing it. Look, you see, we're really not racist. We're doing this. And they're going to hide behind this and continue to do what they do, which is support the anti-Semites, support the white supremacists, support the fascists in this country.
Let's go back to some letters. We have to take a break, but let's hit a couple of the letters before
okay.
we do that.
Sarah says, good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. Good morning.
For the past... Thank you, Malcolm, for going along. Good morning. For the past 48 hours, the media has characterized Trump's words as equivocation. Why? Trump's refusal to call out the KKK, neo-Nazis, and white supremacists is not, capitalized, not an oversight nor a mistake. It's calculated strategy. I'm incredibly disheartened, and Sarah will all join you on that. Sarah wrote that letter. Kevin says, Teresa's right. Paul Ryan is in the moral hot seat in getting the House to move on getting the president fired, Kevin. Yeah. Yeah, that's going to happen. Maybe not when it goes down to 22%, but mm-hmm. not there yet.
Right.
And the real question I'm looking at now is after Charlottesville, what the polls look like.
Yeah.
Does he enhance that 33% or does the
33%?
Yeah. Okay, Andrew.
We should note, however, yeah. not to interrupt, but that Paul Ryan was really the first national leader to come out and to be very, very strong in his
very
language
strong.
On Saturday.
And he is of that group, Joe, which I was saying before, of regular Republicans who knew about David Duke and who were not going to let that guy elect. What was he running for, governor?
Congress.
No, well, I don't know.
Well, I think
whatever he was running for, it doesn't matter. Oh, yeah. It doesn't matter. The responsible Republicans spoke up.
Yes.
And I think that's the way Ryan sees himself. Because thank you, Andrew says, thank you for having Malcolm on this morning, and every morning he's on. Also, it's good to see that the president had the gumption to make a Twitter blast this morning. I'm sure that Ken Frazier of Merck deserved a more critical response for taking a stand and leaving the president's manufacturing council than the neo-Nazis this weekend. That's Andrew in Pittsfield.
Yeah, it's amazing that Ken Frazier is the head of Merck Pharma, and he resigned from the president's manufacturing council. And so Donald Trump attacked him and tweeted about him and says maybe now I'll have, quote, more time to lower rip-off drug prices.
So the question is...
What?
Yeah, he says, tweet, now that Ken Frazier of Merck Pharma has resigned from President's Manufacturing Council, they have more time to lower rip-off drug prices.
And what did Michelle Obama say?
When we go
the
low.
The presidency shows who you really are.
Mm-hmm. The amazing thing to me is that this is a surprise to anyone. I mean, he's behaving as he behaved during the campaign. This is not a surprise. He would not denounce. He acted like he didn't know, and finally when he denounced
and
him.
And he said, go beat him up, and I'll pay
but
you
legal
bills.
But it was a week later, I mean, for the denouncement of David Duke.
Right. But even Fox had something on that says, neo-Nazi website praises Trump response. Trump comments were good. He didn't attack us. When asked to condemn, he just walked out of the room. Really, really good. God bless him. This is a quote they put up from the Daily Stormer. Fox held
him accountable.
You should
read the article. I mean, GoDaddy took down Daily Stormer, which is good. But the article that they wrote about the woman who was killed mm-hmm. was unbelievably vile. you know, oh, she's not going to have children, so she's worthless, and she'll just be a drag on all of us. So it's good that she's dead, because she was fat, and she couldn't get out of the way of the car. I mean, these people are
right.
Base, the worst.
All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue. We welcome your comments. Panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Very nice to have you with us. Alan.
I keep thinking about JFK and Profiles in Courage. And I keep thinking about people who were sitting around the table with their children and their wives or husbands, and who really now have to take a real hard look inside themselves and say, is my job in a pharmaceutical worth it? Is my political career worth it to take an abysmal position, which I know is really the wrong thing to do? And for those people who go to church or who go to synagogue or who go to the mosque, these are people who at some point have to take stock. And I'm thinking now that this is one of those times. So Ken Fraser, by the way, Teresa points out, and I didn't know this, who resigned from the president's council, is a black man. And I think it's very important that everybody know that. So somebody says, okay, are you with us or aren't you? Malcolm, I know the panel is very interested in what you have to say about Korea, even on a day like this.
Well, you know, Korea seems like months ago. But in fact, it was just last Friday that we were exchanging very, very serious trades of rhetoric, which people were using words that were equating to threats of atomic war. And I know we talked about that on the roundtable a couple of times before, but last week was damn serious. I mean, I talked to my peers who are both retired and active in the intelligence community. Everyone's terrified because the president of the United States has authority to launch a Minuteman missile or any type of strike package that he wants at North Korea without any authorization whatsoever, without any approval other than his own decision-making. And that's Donald Trump we're talking about here. That being said, he sort of hinted that he was going to use these B-1 bombers and the cruise missile carrying submarine. That's only about 200 or 300 missiles. We could use every one of the 10,000 cruise missiles in our inventory without atomic warheads. And we would not even start to damage the North Korean capacity to completely devastate South Asia. I mean, they could bombard Seoul with just high explosive and nerve agents and mustard gas. They could nuke Tokyo. Their missiles have the capacity to carry a nuke that far. And he's taking a bet that Seattle and Anchorage are safe. There's no president that has ever, ever, ever dared utter words that we've gone to last week. And quite frankly, it's terrifying.
What about the response and the conversation that was revealed over the weekend between the president and the president of Guam? The governor of Guam?
Governor
of Guam.
Right.
About how this would increase tourism?
Yeah, you know, the threat of thermonuclear destruction always has a positive value when it comes to tourist trade.
You know, you have to change the postcards, but other than that, it's pretty good, right?
You know what?
He actually believes that. Donnie Deutsch mentioned that this morning on Morning Joe, that Trump actually sees this as a positive.
I don't understand. I don't understand that logic, but I don't even understand how one can come to that logic. Meaning, how do you even get to that place where that in some way, shape, or form, even though we're playing around and we're threatening that, that your particular place in the world could be bombed, that that is going to be a positive.
You know, the problem here is that we're all laughing at it. And there's nothing funny about this whatsoever. You know, somebody was talking on one of the cable things, perhaps you saw it, Malcolm, about Nixon's theory of the madman, which was, or maybe it was on NPR this morning, he was a madman and you could never count him out. He could do anything he wanted and he was going to scare the hell out of them, out of these other folks who were his adversaries. Maybe that's part of what he thinks is doing. I don't know.
Well, the thing is, it leaves all of us.
Let's go to Malcolm because we're going to lose him.
Okay, sorry, I know, you got to go. Yeah,
go ahead, Malcolm.
Okay, he's betting the lives of millions of people on that. That is contemptible right there. As far as I'm concerned, that's disqualifying from the presidency of the United States. No one should ever make that bet that our opposition may not have the technological savvy to retaliate. Last week's talk was not just talk about, you know, fighting with North Korea. It was about an American preemptive attack on North Korea using either nuclear weapons or a mass of conventional weapons. But, you know, we've said this before, Donald Trump has no consequence management skills. He does not know how to look beyond what he is saying unless it benefits himself. And, you know, I'm not saying anything that isn't well known. This is very, very well known. And I think that anyone that enables that, including the Secretary of Defense, the Chief of Staff, General Kelly, they have to know that if they allow Donald Trump to be in that position to where he's willing to make that bet with his mouth, they really need to either defuse him or they need to get out of those jobs and show him that they will not be party to this type of discussion. Mm.
But Malcolm, doesn't the notion that he's pursuing the madman theory as Nixon did presume that he has enough strategic understanding to do so? I mean, I don't know that he has that level of strategic awareness to pursue the madman theory. Certainly Nixon did, but I don't think he knows enough to know what that is.
He doesn't. He does not have that ability to think beyond his next 60 seconds. I mean, I've met and spoke to people who know Donald Trump personally and very well. And Tim O'Brien, the editor for Bloomberg, who wrote the book Trump Nation, he told me personally, he said, 60 seconds. That's the length of time that he can focus on any particular issue. And you have to also understand, Richard Nixon based the madman theory on Kim Jong-un's father, right? Kim Jong-il.
Right. Right.
You know, being able to go right up to the edge of brinksmanship and using provocation as the fundamental basis of a strategy. Nixon himself was a very savvy politician, and he knew that it was unthinkable to discuss the potential nuclear annihilation of anyone.
And he understood the world. He understood politics and he understood the world. I don't think Trump has a global understanding. And so other question is, what do you think the fire breaks are and how dangerous the lack of staffing in the State Department is?
Well, hold you there. Malcolm, let me ask you a question. Are you, if we called you back in about 7 minutes, would you be able to stay with us for the rest of the show?
Sure.
All right.
Glad to stay on the round
table. All right. So let's do that. We'll take a pause, and then we'll come back, and we'll continue our conversation. Then we'll have Malcolm for the rest of the program. We'll take a news break. Ray is in his post. He's ready to go. Alan has lots of letters. He's ready to go. We'll be right back after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan Chartok, Teresa Bourgeois, Libby Post, all in the studio. Malcolm Nance joining us by telephone from parts unknown, although I believe it's in Pennsylvania.
But with Malcolm, you never know.
No, you never know. But we're thrilled
that he could be calling from the Ukraine.
It's Philadelphia today, the city that started all of this.
That's right.
Guam, you're in Guam.
Got us into all of this. All right, so let us go to some letters, and then we'll move on to some other topics here.
Well, Alan, the guy's name is Jefferson Beauregard Sessions. Thank you, listener. I had said Jeffrey.
Alan stands corrected.
Well, if I say I stand corrected, I stand corrected.
Right,
if
yeah,
you
sitting.
Say I stand corrected,
corrected,
not necessarily.
You're sitting.
Okay. Joel says, who will step in to fill the leadership vacuum? How about all our former presidents making a joint statement? I'll bet he would love that. I bet Trump would love that.
Well,
he said,
all a
that's
bunch
the
of
establishment.
Losers,
yeah, right.
Because they're not president anymore.
How about more people like the CEO of Merck, who says, as a matter of personal conscience, I feel right. responsibility to take a stand against intolerance and extremism.
They ought to put up a statue to him. I'm not kidding. Joseph says, hi, panel. Just last week, Trump urged the police to be more abusive in the treatment of arrestees. Bang their heads as you put them in the car. I have the opinion that our president is not so closeted a Nazi. Karen says, I agree with Teresa that this is bigger than Trump. And more important, this clearly shows once again that Trump is not a leader, never has been. He's a follower of the alt-right, Fox News ideology at all. Why else would he spend so much time listening to them for his talking points? He's a tool of the whole movement. More important question might be, what do the Democrats and moderate Republicans do now? Maybe find a real leader, a la John McCain or some Democrat. But who of that stripe? Yes, I know McCain is terminally ill. I mean, somebody with his abilities. Populism is dangerous on both sides. Karen.
But we can all do things like look at who funds, who advertises on Breitbart. Let's call them out. That's their vehicle, one of their vehicles for communication. What is Twitter and Facebook doing about the hate that streams over through their, channels? And Malcolm, you probably have other ideas, but we as individuals and people like Ken Frazier and others can fill this gap where there's no moral authority on this issue from the White House, but all of us can do something.
But it's the pressure of capitalism versus conscience.
Malcolm?
If I could just say, I think that this is an opportunity for every individual to show leadership on this point. We don't have to wait for the next Kennedy. We don't have to wait for, the new, improved Hillary Clinton. Every person should stand. And as the CEO of Merck just took a great stand this morning, showing us just if we all stood up as a nation, 75% of this country would be opposed to this very small faction of extremists.
Diane writes, thank you, Malcolm Nance, for clearly saying what's been missing from our national discussion. Trump is a racist, and to go further, I suggest he is a closeted white supremacist. And that's from Diane from Royalston, Massachusetts. And Barbara says, hi, panel. It seems so many former military go into law enforcement. As police officers, they are trained to serve and protect, but the military experience perhaps causes them to view their constituents as enemy combatants, especially when they look different from them. Thoughts, Malcolm? And that's from Barbara.
Can I correct that? Because I've trained several states, hundreds and hundreds of policemen. I've found, on average, only 2% of law enforcement officers serve in the military. They all go to police academies out of high school or out of university. And I think what they are is that many of them want the trappings of the military, but they don't go into the military and get that discipline. But 99% of these officers serve with honor and valor.
Right.
And it's just there's a small pocket of them that aren't suitable for the force.
Malcolm, can you please comment on the video showing the alt-right terrorists pushing back the police line, the police in full riot gear, and the police allowing that to happen with no response? Susan from Sunderland.
I agree with some commentators that the Virginia State Police and Virginia local police were overwhelmed mm-hmm. by the number of protesters on all sides. But, I thought that they did not place enough force nearby the armed militias to show them that there's a counterforce here, that if you step into this engagement, we're gonna make it painful for you, which is why we fund SWAT teams. But for the most part, I think that that this is going to have, when other police agencies handle this in the future, they're going to have to understand they're dealing with essentially the remnants of a past terrorist group that are now reforming into a national extremist group. This isn't the first time we've had to deal with Nazis. One of the guys who was injured in the rioting by a CO2 container or a bear spray container was a young neo-Nazi that confronted me just a week ago at Politicon trying to get me to say that, you know, there's a double standard in how blacks and whites are treated, and whites should have white pride. And as I told him, I said, listen, I gave every minute of my life defending your right to say whatever crazy thing you want, but there's a frame that goes around you when you start using phrases like white power, white pride. And he got that frame this week.
Andrew says, thank you for having Malcolm on this morning, and every morning he's on. Also, it's good to see that the president had...
I think we did that one.
Oh, I read this one already?
Yep.
I think it's the same.
Okay.
I'm sure that Ken Frazier of Merck...
Yes.
I did read that?
Yep.
So sorry. Teresa's right. Paul Ryan is on the moral hot seat.
You already read that.
Read that? Okay. This is not going well.
Well, we can also take a minute to note that two state police were also killed in the midst of all of this. And, you know, thoughts and prayers go out to them. And I agree with you, Malcolm. I think, and I wasn't there, but it seems that they were not prepared for how quickly it got out of hand. And the notion of some people that the police stood down, it seemed more that they were overwhelmed than they stood down.
Good morning, panel. I had to laugh ruefully, of course, when I saw that the Justice Department was opening a civil rights investigation following the events in Charlottesville. This is, of course, the get-out-of-jail-free card that Attorney General Sessions gets to reuse every time he's asked to weigh in on the issues raised. He cannot comment on an ongoing investigation, Rachel.
Well, I'd like to see if, in fact, he does pursue this with more vigilance than the president is suggesting. You know, it might be
this is a place
where he breaks with the president. We'll see what happens.
But it will be their get-out-of-jail-free card because it'll be their opportunity to say, see, we're doing something.
But your point in the break, Teresa, was a very good one, which is that this may be a chance for Sessions, who has got to be pretty angry at this president, to be waiting for the right moment to really give him a little twist.
Well, it's possible that he'll do the right thing in this case, and certainly his colleagues, former colleagues in the Senate, came out pretty forcefully, and he did come out right away when, Pence waited until he was out of the country and others, but he... Sessions,
but even right Pence, Rosemary, even Pence out of the country.
No, Teresa. That's Teresa.
Teresa. Teresa.
You only wish it was Rosemary.
What is this Rosemary
thing? You were channeling. You were just channeling.
You are too kind, Libby. It's frightening.
Well,
it's frightening.
I'm not going there, Alan.
Yeah, frightening. Okay, but you're right. But Teresa, you're absolutely right. But he got out of the country, and then he equivocated a little bit.
He was much stronger. I agree.
But I wonder how truly concerned and how much Jeff Sessions really believes the rhetoric he's saying, or if he's saying it because he knows it's politically expedient and can tweak the president. This is a man who wants to dismantle affirmative action. I don't see him seeing this as being all that bad.
We'll just see. I'm also interested to see what General Kelly does in the White House. You know, what happens to Bannon and Gorka and Stephen Miller.
Now, we should note that that Anthony Scaramucci appeared on this week with George Stephanopoulos.
And he's going to be on Colbert tonight.
And he'll be on Colbert tonight. And he basically said that he felt intimated that Bannon was on his way out, and also thought that there was that the White House had did a bad job on Saturday in responding to the tragic events in Charlottesville. Any comments on that, Malcolm?
What? So you're saying the Bannon's getting mooched? Mooch would know.
He's got
Mooch
a crink in his neck. So
yeah. Very nice. All right.
What did you make of McMaster? Did you hear him yesterday, Malcolm?
I'm very deeply disappointed with all three generals at this point, and certainly McMaster of all of them. I don't know whether he believes that he is just reining in, you know, the national security cats and trying to keep it all together, but he's an active serving general, so he has to take orders and keep his mouth shut, and he also has to march to the tune of the White House. But there is a rhetorical suicide pact between McMaster's Kelly and Mattis, that if one goes, they all go. That's I've heard that on very good authority. But I think it's time for them. And one last thing you notice, Trump has this fascination with Marines. I mean, he's got the Dunford, the German of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Mattis, and apart from McMaster, he loves these Marines, but he likes them as sort of ceremonial figures. And it doesn't appear that Kelly has managed to rein the president in at all.
No.
So let us move on to the investigation going into the Trump administration. Robert Mueller has said that he is seeking interviews with the West Wing in the Russia case. This, of course, after the Paul Manafort, the decision to do the early morning raid of Paul Manafort's home, and a sign that the investigation into Russian interference in the 2016 presidential election will remain a continuing distraction for the White House. The special counsel, Robert Mueller, is in talks with the West Wing about interviewing current and former senior administration officials, including the recently ousted White House Chief of Staff Ryan Priebus, according to three people briefed on the discussions. Mr. Mueller has asked the White House about specific meetings, who attended them, and whether there are any notes, transcripts, or documents about them. Two of them said, among the matters Mr. Mueller wants to ask the officials about is President Trump's decision in May to fire the FBI Director James Comey. That line of questioning will be important as Mr. Mueller continues to investigate whether Mr. Trump obstructed justice in the dismissal of Jim Comey.
Yeah, the obstruction of justice thing seems to be prominent as a potential place for him to go, for Mueller to go. We do know that the president told, well, at least it was in print, told the Russians that he had fired him to get the pressure off on, quote, the Russian thing.
He told Lester Holt that.
Yeah, he does. This is going to be, I got to tell you, Crew, I was just at the National Association of Black Journalists Conference in New Orleans last weekend.
Oh, I heard that was fun. You know,
oh, yeah, especially when Omarosa showed up.
Yeah, kind of crazy, huh?
Yeah, not a receptive audience.
why don't you explain it to our listeners who may not have been in on on that one?
Well, there was last week the National Association of Black Journalists held their annual conference in New Orleans, and it's several thousands and thousands of young and aspiring journalists and very, very well-known journalists. April Ryan received the award for Journalist of the Year. You might recall that probably for being asked to negotiate on or act as secretary on behalf of President Trump to get the African-American, the Black Caucus to call him, which she didn't take very well. But Omarosa Marigold, the advisor to President Trump, showed up to have a discussion of violence against Black youth. And Jason Johnson, my friend, was on that panel, and it got contentious. People stood up and turned their backs on her, and they said, look, you're the representative of the White House. You have to expect to be treated like a representative of the White House. And they treated her with contempt.
So you were going to a point, though, Malcolm, of saying at that conference, your bringing these two together?
We spoke about the Trump investigation, and that morning that I did my panel, it had been announced that the Mueller investigation was now going to question Donald Trump's longtime personal private secretary. And if you remember Watergate, when Nixon's private White House secretary was
Rosemary Woods.
Interviewed Rosemary Woods. It did not go well. And for Trump to have someone who knows every minute of his business for the last 20 years to be questioned repeatedly, and she will be questioned repeatedly on all of these events because she was carbon copied on the letter that Eric Trump, the email Eric Trump had said, Rona, make sure my dad sees it or something along those lines. This is not going to bode well for his future prospects. And there, the Mueller investigation is a wood chipper. It is a wood chipper attached to a steamroller, and it is not going to stop.
Exactly right.
And sorry.
No, good. I was just, we only have about 5 minutes left, but you had asked a question, Teresa, right before the break, and we have a couple of listeners who have come in and said that they want us to come back to your question about the fire breaks. Could you just ask that again?
Yeah, I was just in the North Korea situation, Malcolm, I was just wondering what you think are the potential fire breaks, and what about the lack of personnel in the State Department? How dangerous is that?
And what definition are you using as fire breaks?
That to help stop the curtail the situation in North Korea from getting out of control.
Well, technically, the only fire breaks that we have right now are the senior executive staff in the White House. That's General Mattis, Secretary of Defense. You know, someone's going to need to conduct an intervention with Donald Trump. They're going to have to all three sit him down and say, this is getting out of control. This could lead to war. Its result is it could cost hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people, their lives. And as I said before, no president has ever bet the lives of the citizens of Alaska and Washington State, which is about how far a North Korean missile can get right now, has bet their lives in such a glib way. This is serious, and he needs to be spoken to like a five-year-old by a group of adults. That's the only firebreak there is.
Do you think China is going to gain some strength here because they're going to be the leader in this? Just as on climate change, they're gaining strength, global strength, because they're going to be the leader on that?
Yeah, it's frustrating. China has been gaining global strength from the very moment Donald Trump started to run. And then when he won, China essentially launched themselves to almost parity with the United States. We're falling. All of this Make America Great stuff is absolutely wrong. The United States right now is pretty much abdicating its role as world leader. It's taken second fiddle to Vladimir Putin and President Xi of China. And China is eating our lunch economically. Mm-hmm. 10 years ago, they were nowhere on the world solar stage. They dominate and own the entire solar industry. They are getting rid of coal. They're not going to buy West Virginia coal. They don't even buy. They're stopping their purchases of coal from Australia, which is far closer. They understand this is where opportunity lies, in that the United States has decided to defeat itself. And they're going to take it, and they're going to run with it, and they're going to eat our lunch.
By the way, Teresa, who really does six things at once, just came up with a very interesting article on her machine here, which basically says that Angela Merkel is the latest to step up on the violence in Charlottesville. Can you characterize that?
From a Wire story from Berlin, German Chancellor Angela Merkel on Monday slammed as, quote, disgusting the role of white supremacists in a violent protest in Virginia and as a, quote, evil attack, quote, unquote, against counter-demonstrators that left one woman dead, her spokesperson said. Sharply worded remarks, Merkel denounced the rally by the Ku Klux Klan members and other white nationalists.
And remember,
and Charlottesville whites. This is the
and remember
of Germany, the chancellor. Yeah, Germany.
Well, she has spent her life fighting the Nazis.
Yes,
right,
she has.
Right.
And she prosecutes people. That the government prosecutes people who do stuff, similar stuff, in that country. And here she now speaks up and says, basically, I can't do any less than criticize somebody who does this within the context of the world order.
It's a quite a statement. Quite a statement.
We are out of time, so we'll let it go, and we'll end there. My thanks to everyone joining us this morning. Malcolm, thank you very much for being with us. Thanks for taking time out of your schedule and the travel and being with us this morning. I appreciate it. I know you're back home next week, so hopefully we can nail you down for some time to come in next week.
We love you, Malcolm.
You're wonderful.
All right, we love you too, and I'll see you when I get home.
Excellent. Thank you very much. Also, thanks to Alan and Teresa and Libby. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.